going to drive a fittings size. The die is going to drive the studs size.
Okay, so there's such a thing as a M10 to 3/8-24 cap. Is that correct?
No, negative. In machinery, you're doing one or the other. You're adjusting the size of the stud, or you're adjusting the size of the fitting.
Well, I have two sides, remember. I have one size, I have to adjust the size of the stud, and on the other side, I have to adjust the size of the fitting.
I'm not sure right now what you're trying to mechanically connect. I don't understand. If you're trying to make a stud to a fitting, I'm trying to narrow this down with you on how to do it. But you're telling me now you KD2FIR, back off.
I think he's describing a coupling.
He can mechanically fit it if he wants. I'm not sure how many mechanical connections he's trying to do at once.
Trying to fit a coil in line with a whip and an antenna mount. So you have a whip coming out the top and out of the bottom of the coil. You screw that into an antenna mount.
Well, Rich, I'm trying to separate this from coils and antennas and make a mechanical fitting here. Your stud is 3/8-24 or your stud is N10? You told me it was N10? And you want to go into a 3/8-24 fitting, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, that's a single mechanical connection. And if the 3/8-24, if the N10 is larger than the 3/8-24, roll a die over the N10 with a 3/8-24 die.
Okay, George, but that's just solving half of the problem. I also have an M10 female fitting. I need to couple this coil into an antenna. So both sides are not the same. Both sides of the coil do not have a male M10 coming off the top. One side has an M10 male coming off the top, but the other side of the coil has an M10 female.
Let me jump in, if I may, AF2P.
Feel free.
KD2FIU, please take it on this because I'm trying to help him with each mechanical connection at once. And every time I think we've gotten past each one, I'm being directed to the other one. So, Roy, I'll give it back to you, and you have another guest in there who wants to take it. AC2GS, KD2FIU.
Okay, very good, George. The problem is that there are two connections. If you're able to simply convert the top connection, you're still stuck with the mirror of that situation at the bottom. where now you're dealing with an M10 female and a male, you know, 3/8 or whatever the hell it is. So you can't, obviously, you can't just kind of tap both because one's bigger than the other on one side and it works. The other's smaller than that and it won't work. So you got to use a different method for the second connection if you're going to start using things like threaders and taps and stuff. Anyway, someone wanted to make a comment. Please do.
This is AAFTP. If you take substitute the word coupling for the word coil, both you guys, and then describe the situation, because the coupling has to mate with threads on the top and on the bottom. And I think that will solve it once you understand that the coil is mechanically coupling the whip at the top to the base at the bottom. AF2P.
Maybe I could put it like this. I need to convert two M10s. One's a male and one's a female. I need to convert both of them to 3/8 24.
For the stud, you're going to run a die over it. And for the other end, which is female, you're going to run a tap. 3/8 24 tap into it. You may need a bottoming tap, though. Over.
Yeah, but only one of them can be bigger than the other. So if the die and the tap work for the top, it shouldn't work for the bottom because because it's the opposite. It's, you can't have both ends being bigger than the other. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know the call, but I think that's right. One's a tap and one's a die. I need a tap for the top and a die for the bottom.
Well, that's different. On top, if you have an N10 on top and you want to put a 3/8 24 into that, you can't. As you mentioned, the N10 is larger.
Yeah, anyone with comments? Everyone fell quiet all of a sudden.
You want 3/8 24 to go into an N10. You cannot tap the N10 to 50, the 3/8 24 if the N10 is larger. But in the other direction, the N10 can go to a 3/8 24 because, as I understand Rich is saying, the 3/8 24 is smaller. You can fit that with a die. I'm confused here on what you're trying. You're going N10, N10, to 3/8 24 in each direction. So you're going from stud, you're going from connector to stud, N10, to 3/8 24 into connector, which you can't do, as I understand that N is larger. And if you want to go N10 into, 3/8 24 into N10, you can with a die.
The bottom line is you can tap and die one of those connections, but not both of them, because it's not a matter of getting rid of some of the material, because in one direction, you're going in the wrong direction. You have to either build up the material, which you can't do this way. So if you can put an insert into it and then re-thread it, you might be able to get it that way, but you can't just use a simple tap and die for both of the connections, just one of them where you'll be scraping away some of the excess material. That's doable. Where you have to kind of put material back in, that's a big problem.
Roy, that's what I've been trying to say. That you can't go from one to the other or the other to one. You can't go in reverse direction. You can't make it larger. I've been trying to say that.
Yes, I think we kind of, well, I've been trying to say it in a different way. You've been trying to say it in the way that you are. And even Rich is kind of, he's saying, but what about the other connection? Because, again, the tap and the die will work for one of those two connections, but it will not work for the other one. So, there, you know, unless you can figure out how to deal with the other one, a little point in playing tap and die with one connection and leaving the other one disconnected. I think that's the big problem. The big problem is trying to figure out how the heck you can get the other one to work. Because that requires something more...
Roy, I gotta ask Rich a question.
Go ahead, George.
Is this coil expensive?
$25.
And this has the N10 fitting on sides, correct?
Say that again.
And this coil has the N10 fittings on both sides?
Correct. One female, one male.
I would search for a coil of that value that is 3/8 both ends. Because it won't work. It will not work. Either way, we can tap and die in one direction. And Roy and I have agreed on this. Because you can mechanically do one side, but you can't mechanically do the other. So, wait till you hear the garbage truck outside. That's where the coil goes. Get a new one.
They make adapters for both sides. They sell them on Amazon.
But how strong will they last? Start to put adapters in something, even if it's a mobile that's going to be handling overpasses or things like that. We get into adapters, we're changing what we want to do. If it's a mobile antenna, forget it. If it's a base antenna, well, you're also dealing with wind and things like that. $25 for the coil, we're going to spend a lot of money trying to tap and die in direction by adapters in both directions, get the right coil.
2EAV with a suggestion.
Just the way.
Okay, I'm not sure what kind of mount he has, but if it's possible, take that 3H24 stud out and replace it with an M10 stud.
I mean, that could be possible.
Yeah, the Home Depot has them, but it's very inexpensive.
Rich, did you look up Amazon? I'm just looking at a mic stand adapter. It says 3/8 female to M10 male adapter. Did you look into that?
Not only did I look into it, I bought it. The problem is the 3/8 is coarse thread. I need a 3/8 fine, 3/8 24.
Okay.
So I have two adapters, because they're M10, but the other side, the 3/8, do not connect to the whip or the antenna mount.
Okay, I realize that I'm a little bit flippant with money sometimes, but I would go to George's solution. You know, I mean, this looks like when you finally get it done, it's only going to cost $120. You know, so you know, what's the price of replacing the loading coil?
Well, there's another loaded coil that I could get, except they don't give the specification on what the thread is.
So you may end up in the same predicament.
So this is to make my own, or I could use those adapters to hold an O-ring on either side and just go with a wire from the coil to the base of the whip and the coil to the base of the antenna adapter. I could do it with two little wires, but I don't know if that would change anything.
82FIU.
82FTP.
Yeah, Chris. Chris first, George second.
Just a quick suggestion. You can get the adapters you need that will work in the right threading at Ace Hardware on Vets Highway in Bohemia. Vets Highway in Bohemia, Ace Hardware, south side of the road. They will have it. K2FTP.
You hear that, Rich?
I got it. It's a little hike from Riverhead, but I know I got that. There are other Ace Hardwares around here I could look into. I was sure I would find it in AutoZone, but I couldn't find it.
Complication. There are different M10 threads.
Yeah, I had a thought.
There were two M10 times 1.5, and one is M10 times 1.25. Over.
Well, I solved the problem of finding an M10 to 3/8. Except the 3/8 part is wrong.
Can fix the 3/8 to find.
I need to go to 3/8 find,
at the
not core
end of the coil.
And these adapters that Amazon sells are M10 to 3/8 coarse, as I understand it.
KD2FI.
3/8 course, I believe, is 3/8 16. Way off.
Right, I need 3/8 24.
Change it, but it really becomes a mess over that. It really got.
KD2FIU.
Yeah, George?
Yeah, I want to ask Rich, how long is the radiator, and what is the composition of the radiator on the top end of this coil?
It's aluminum, and it's an adjustable 25-foot whip.
Yeah, good luck with adapters. Good luck with adapters, because they will not last. You got to have solid one-on-one unit-to-unit fittings. KD2FIU.
Probably right, George.
That will snap right off.
Yeah, when that whip is extended, it does take some kind of wind load on it. It does, George, you're right.
Okay, so you got to get the right coil, because I have rebuilt some of these extended whip antennas for, and actually got different taps and dies, but I made sure I went back into the original unit to unit. I didn't get any adapters to extend in between, because the adapters themselves gives you two more vulnerable points. Points to deal with. Now you're going to do that once, you're going to do it twice, as being below and above the coil? Forget it. Your vulnerability to break that down is tremendous. KD2FIU.
Coil would probably break in the middle also. But I will try to find a coil or build one. I could go to Home Depot and get the parts and use PVC and build a coil. I know the Micro Henry value, and I could just build one with 3/8-24 hardware.
Okay, Rich, we all wish you good luck. Come back and tell us how it worked out. Yeah, I mean, it's always nice to get equipment, you know, find an excuse to buy a tap and a die and all kinds of fun stuff to add to your collection. But I don't know, it strikes me that you're getting too many things and it's getting increasingly complicated. So you're probably better off to start at the very beginning and rethink it as far as, you know, a method that doesn't require a bunch of adapters and threading them and tapping them and all kinds of stuff.
I agree. It's outside of my pay grade.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to bow to the inevitable.
This is looking more and more like that.
Well, you know, sometimes the bear gets you and sometimes you get the bear. This time the bear got you.
Chalk up one for AliExpress.
Okay, God knows what the tariffs will be that moment in time.
We'll see about that one, too, unfortunately.
Yep. Well, I think we finally put this one to bed. David, are you still out there? I remember you throwing out your name. Did you want to say something, or you have a different topic? I guess David left us for the night. Anyone else with any questions, comments, or topics?
Katie, PhD, a follow-up from last week.
Yeah, sure.
I was curious at that station I was trying to program the Poofwang handy-talkie. Had any luck after we gave him some thoughts last week, if he's here.
Oh, okay. If you're out there still, tell us how it worked out. That would be Howard, N2YYC. Howard, are you out there? No, Howard's not a regular. He's a kind of semi-regular.
Understood. Thanks for trying. Today I went through the process of learning how to decode a CTCSS code on a Poofwang. It's even wackier. But I succeeded finally. Anyway, thanks. Back to that.
Okay, well, perseverance pays off. But, you know, Some things are just difficult to figure out. Valve plugs have been particularly difficult. Someone mentioned earlier that the ARRL actually published a book on how to field program a valve plug. Years and years ago, I found on the Internet a nice short summary of how to do it that you could fold up into eighths and stick in your wallet. And I handed it out to a bunch of people in my club, the Kings County Radio Club at that time. We're not the first people to find Valfung's problematic when it comes to field programming. Once again, I'm AC2GS. We still have a little bit more time if anyone has any questions or comments or topics for discussion. So anyone out there with any of that, feel free, hit that push to talk.
AF2P with a question.
Certainly.
I have an electronic device with a beautiful double pole, double throw, center off toggle switch. The switch works great, but the plastic extension to the toggle is gone. So you've got a little flat piece of metal, about a quarter inch, and you operate that sucker, and it's painful on your fingers. Now, I just want to know, has anybody ever experienced that, where you can find a plastic thing, piece to just fit right on there instead of jury-rigging and get the right plastic piece? Has anybody ever done that? I've never done it. Otherwise, I'm going to have to jury-rig something.
Yeah, I tend to think that people at best just jury-rigged. If anyone has any good ideas, you know, what would be perfect is a kind of a repository for 3D models of just about every contraption, mechanical contraption, switches and such. This would be a perfect opportunity if you have a friend who has a 3D printer. You just kind of put the 3D model in and you get something out. But the problem is finding the source material. You know, the guy who designed that switch probably 50 years ago and before anyone had any kind of 3D files on things. But if anyone has any suggestions, please feel free to hit that push to talk. No, nothing, unfortunately. And I'm sure you really don't want to try to disassemble the switch mechanics to see what kind of plastic is in the half that still remains. So you can kind of either get a silicone mold or you know, putty it or do some epoxy it. You know, the epoxy kind of hardens in an hour or so. You can kind of extend it off the shaft and try something like that.
I'm going to have to jury rig, or, you know, then I have to disassemble the damn thing, which is a pain in the neck, to finally get into the switch to replace it. It just seems easier if I can just jury-rig a hand one to it. But thanks, Roy, and the printing something would be great if, like you said, if there was a pattern somebody had come up with.
Yep, maybe someday they'll do things like that. But, you know, in the same way that now there are PDF files of all kind of service manuals, and it's not as difficult as it once was that when you needed a hard copy, and only a hard copy. You know, the Internet has made some things easier and other things harder. But I wish you luck. I hope you figure it out.
Thank you.
Okay, once again, I still am AC2GS. This still is the Limark Technical Net, and we're still open for business. So if anyone has any questions or comments or topics that they'd like to roll around, feel free. We've got at least another 9 minutes. So if you got 9 minutes worth of stuff. Okay, I get the message. You know, it's not that bad. We'll just probably have an ever so slightly shorter technical net. So I'll ask one last time if anyone has any questions or topics or comments before we move on to the next segment.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Did you read the
the guy that got himself killed with that MRI machine, Westbury.
Yeah, that's the dumbest story. Well, one of the dumbest stories I've ever heard. There's signs all over the damn place. Don't bring any metal into the MRI room. You get killed. Surprise, surprise. Yeah, you don't screw around with magnets, and these are massive magnets. I don't know if anyone's played with, one or two or three-pound neodymium magnets. You can crush your hand into a pulp. Depending upon what they squeeze together, if they do it in your head, you're dead. Yeah, I heard it. I don't understand it, though. I mean, there's signs all over the damn place. Did this guy have a visual impairment or something, or was he just kind of a little brain dead?
Yeah, I got an update on the story where apparently he had a relative in there. I haven't figured out who yet. And that person was, screaming bloody murder. People don't like the MRI machines for some reason. Me, I could have killed less. I have gone through them. But this person was screaming, and he pulled the door open, and then he went. And that was it. He had the chain around his neck, and it pulled him into the machine. That's what I heard, So I guess the next step is, they're going to have to put some kind of temporary lock on these doors, I guess, so nobody could inadvertently open them. Back to you.
Katie,
yes, George?
The weed dispensary that he had just stopped at had a new form of skunk.
Could you repeat that? I didn't really get it.
I don't think I should. I was making a reference to legalization of skunk weed.
Oh, well, there's a lot of different reasons why a lot of people do a lot of stupid things, so it's not just drugs. But that's part of it. But it's a terrible shame, and the nanny state will probably require multiple locks to get into the MRI room. It's a travesty. Take responsibility for yourself. A lot of signs. I'm sure in the outside of the room there's a lot of signs that say caution. Don't bring anything magnetic. If the guy had a 24-carat gold necklace, it probably wouldn't be deadly. But he had a lot of probably nickel in that alloy. So, geez, people just do stupid things all the time, unfortunately. And, it's a very powerful magnet. MRIs give people a lot of problems. They can be very noisy. They can be very claustrophobic. Closed MRIs are a lot less expensive than open MRIs, so there's a lot of people that, and it makes a heck of a lot of noise, some of those. So, I could understand why they get a little disoriented, but, the guy sitting in the waiting room shouldn't be disoriented. He should see all the signs that say, do not bring metal into this room.
Now, I just heard recently it's, open MRI, so I can't confirm that either. But either way, not good. Boy, I can't imagine the Gauss number on the MRI machine to be able to pull somebody in like that, but it must be just huge. Now, at work we had coil boring machines years ago, and you could attach the magnet, they've got a magnet end of it to hold this thing in place. And, you put that switch on, it was an electromagnet, and I think you could take a bulldozer and you couldn't get that off the steel beam. And then you could operate it, there's a crank on there, you could core bore a hole, that's what it was designed to do. That was just a regular magnet. Can you imagine these MRIs? Wow. Back to you.
Station to Bill. KD2FIU.
Yeah, George.
We don't know all the details. And to expand the details, did somebody signal him? Did somebody wave him in? Did somebody have control over the MRI on and off? Who saw him? Anything like that? Was he just alone doing that on his own with nobody seeing him? In contact with nobody? Or was anybody in contact with him? We don't know. And maybe we'll know in the future. KD2FIU.
Yeah, maybe in the future we'll know. By the way, most MRI machines are about one Tesla, and a Tesla is equal to 10,000 Gausses.
Roy, I hope you know
what I'm saying.
Here is we don't know what the signaling was going on with human intervention that he actually brought him, allowed him in, that allowed him to get past a certain point, or whatever.
Well, that's true. We're just spinning our wheels. I think Chris wanted to say something.
Hey, to Bill.
Yes.
Hey, Roy. Whatever was happening obviously shouldn't have been happening. More importantly, the if that magnet quenched, he could have killed several people in that building just with the displacement of the helium.
Yeah, it could have been a lot worse, but you know, this is not a great success story. It's not, and I guess George is right. We're not dealing with the whole story. We're dealing with the sensational summary. Who knows what's going on? But I don't know. I tend to doubt that someone moved their hands around to kind of suggest that this guy run in with his necklace on. So, I don't know. At the very least, everyone should kind of be advised when they're sitting right outside of an MRI machine not to walk in there under any circumstances unless the magnet's dead. And there's no way for these guys to know when the magnet's live and when the magnet's dead. So, just stay out of the damn room if you have to wear a necklace. Anyway, hopefully some later time we'll discuss this again with much more details of exactly what went on. But, geez, I wouldn't want to be anywhere near those magnets with anything magnetic on me. You're just asking for a lot of trouble. At the very least, you mash up a significant portion of your anatomy. At the worst, you die. Anyway, thanks to everyone for participating tonight. I hope you had fun. I hope you learned a few things. I hope you'll come back next Sunday when we do this all over again. But it is now 10:16 and change in time for Paul, WS2N, and the SpaceNet Report.
Okay, Roy. WS2N is back. Very good. On all the topics tonight. And, by the way, Happy Moon Day today. That's what they call it. I mean, that was first recognized in 2021 by the United Nations. So, the reason for that is because, today's the day that humans first took a couple of steps on the moon back in 1969. So here we are, what, 56 years later. And looking forward to the next time that does happen. And Artemis program is still up and running. So is the Space Launch System. They have not canceled it. There were a lot of people talking about it. But, if you heard me talk about this months and months ago, there's no way in the world I could see that they'll cancel that. There is too many, not only companies involved, but countries involved. Building the building parts of the Space Launch System for the United States. It's really an international effort. You have America, of course, building the Orion
part of it, and you have most of it by Lockheed, and then you have Boeing doing the core stages. You have Aerojet doing the second stage with the cryogenic liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. Northrop Grumman building these sets of solid boosters that attach to the port and starboard side. Then you have foreign countries involved. You have the service module that sits behind Orion, and that's being built over in Europe. And that's got all the tanks for all the astronauts to be able to utilize, you know, everything from water to air to electricity. They have, in the Apollo days, they had fuel cells. You know, you didn't see solar panels sticking out of the Apollo. And they do not use the fuel cells nowadays. They are using solar panels, four big solar panels that come out of the service module. And so, you know, you have that, they're involved. Now you have Japan also involved, because they're eventually going to need a gateway space station going around the moon, which will involve not only vehicles to be attached to it to be used for human transport, you know, to the moon and back up to the space station that will be in lunar orbit. But you're also going to have, you know, resupply missions. And you have Japan is one of those countries that are involved. They're building the HTV-X cargo vehicle, which will be able to fly to the moon, and with their own rocket too. We don't, you know, they're not even going to utilize our rocket. They have a very successful H3 rocket now, heavy lift vehicle for them to be able to send the cargo vehicle to the moon. And in probably a couple of months, they'll be actually flying the new HTVX to the International Space Station for resupply. And that's not really new. I mean, they've been supplying the space station. They did it for 9 straight years with the older, they call it TV supply vehicle. Now they've made a new one, you know, new one improved. They haven't done it in many years, but this is finally complete. So, you know, you'll see the first launch of that this year. So different countries involved, of course. I just don't see them canceling that program. Too many, I think some 40 different states across America contribute to the Space Launch System and Orion and all the support that goes behind doing something like this. And the idea is to go there and stay. So there'll be an Artemis II mission, which will be, you know, a crew of four, which they already have, that will go around the moon and come back, make sure the human capability of Orion works out okay. And then after that, you're going to have future landing missions, roughly one a year, down to the surface of the moon. That's the plan. Well, we all can't predict the future, but right now that's still on the drawing boards, all of that. Any comments? WS2N. Hopefully when they do land on the moon, I'm going to predict now, at least one person, one of the people that land. When I first start doing this, it'll be two people at a time. There'll be four people that get sent to the moon. Two will be in orbit, or, you know, in the
they'll stand by in the Orion spacecraft, and then the other two will go down to the surface. I'm going to make a prediction that at least one of them will be a ham. So, I think something like one-third of all the astronauts do have their ham license. So I think it's a good bet. Let me continue on here.
The Vera Rubin telescope out in Chile, I've talked about that before. I read some more about it. They keep having articles come out about this so far very successful telescope, 28 feet in diameter. It's got the world's largest charge coupled device for receiving pictures, and this thing is like a meter long or a meter wide, and you compare that to the little teeny tiny thing you have in your cell phone, and there is something like 3.2 megapixels. It's probably it's 3.5 gigapixels on this thing. So that's what's new about the Vera Rubin. They'll be able to scan the sky on a regular basis. Every 10 days, they'll completely scan the southern sky, a little bit further than that, too, around 70% of the sky. They'll eventually put pictures, day after day, or every 10 days, you'll have another set of pictures. You'll be able to put them together for a video. And by looking at those videos, you're going to be able to see things moving in the background. They already have done that in the first day or so of operation. They could look at the background, and they could see little dots moving here and there. They've already come up with 2,000 new asteroids in the short period of time. It's only been open, a few weeks. So it's going to be quite an instrument. I also read recently that, they'll be able to find interstellar comets that are going by. Right now there's one that was found, not with Vera Rubin, the other telescopes they used, and it's an interstellar object. It's not in orbit around our sun. So it's just going to pass by. We've had two of them that are known to have done that in the past. And this will be the third one. They call it Atlas 31. They gave the But the prediction with Vera Rubin is that, let's say they operate with, on a regular basis, looking for whatever they're looking for. They predict that they'll be able to find at least 50 interstellar objects or comets moving through our solar system within the first 10 years of operation. Which is it's going to be great for the scientists. They want to find out what the stuff is made of. As it is, this Atlas 31, they're going to use spectroscopes to figure out what kind of gas is coming off of Atlas 31. And I can imagine what's going to be going on in the next who knows how many years with Vera Observatory. Any comments? Okay, nothing heard. There's a company called AST Space Mobile. And they haven't been around long. But their goal is to put satellites into space
that are big enough, with big enough antennas, to copy cell phones here on Earth. So I could be walking down my street, pull out my cell phone, and possibly use that to go through the satellite system being built by AST, Space Mobile. And they've already tested it. And the reason they could do that, they've launched a couple of these giant antenna systems into space already. The problem is the antenna is so big, and it's not really at a high altitude. It's only around 300 miles above the. Actually, a little less than 300 miles above the surface of the Earth, and each antenna is, they say, is almost 700 square feet, which is roughly around 25 feet on each side, and that is causing a problem for the astronomers. I've already seen one picture where, from Earth, they zoomed in, and you could see this big antenna flying through the air. Flying overhead. So you can imagine, you know, not dozens of these things, but 248 satellites they plan on launching. Okay, this sounds like a nightmare for future astronomers, present astronomers, as these things come online. But the biggest problem I could see, as far as I'm concerned, is they are looking to dig into amateur radio frequency. They're looking to get into the 70 centimeter band, so they're looking at you know, 430 and, you know, and up. They're actually, well, they're trying to maybe even go as low as 420, 420 to 450. Mainly in Europe. They plan on doing this in Europe first. So hams in Europe primarily use, you know, 70 centimeters, kind of like we use 2 meters. You know, we have 220 and we have... We have 70 centimeters, and we also have, you know, a lot, you know, the bands are different here in the United States, but they're going after the ones they're going to start with, looking at the European situation. So I think they got the beginning of a little battle going on between AST and the amateur community in Europe. In Europe, they're looking to try to get, like, the ARRL, you know, try to get the United States to get these people with their giant antennas to do something different. Instead of using the between 420 and 450 megahertz. So that's a little disturbing. We'll have to follow, see how they do. They plan on launching these things on a regular basis. We'll see. Any comments? Okay. You know, amateur radio is a proven track record, saving lives. Wildfires, hurricanes, earthquakes, and, you know, all kinds of disasters. So it's widely used for public service, not only in this country, but in Europe. You know, search and rescue. It was used recently down with the disaster they had down in Texas. So you could imagine that. Somebody's frequency's going away, and you know, they got
the government has to have hands off about our frequencies. That's all I can say. Any comments? Okay. Let me just move on to, there was a Dragon launch last Tuesday by SpaceX. SpaceX on July 16th launched 24 Kuiper satellites. So not their own, you know, they've been launching thousands of satellites. They launched Kuiper satellites for Amazon, Jeff Bezos, building these satellites to compete with SpaceX. But, SpaceX will launch anything. You pay them money, they'll put it up there. They've done it with OneWeb. OneWeb was a competitor of SpaceX. Eventually, OneWeb teamed up with a European group, so that they have all kinds of money. They're operational. They have around 650 satellites, broadband satellites. And so, you know, you have SpaceX, you have OneWeb, now you have Kuiper going up. Kuiper, they put up 24 satellites for Amazon. The first group that went up, actually a year or so ago, Amazon sent two satellites up with another group of payloads that worked, you know, fine, 100%. So they were their test satellites. But since then, there's been two other launches by the Atlas V by Boeing and Lockheed. It's called the ULA. ULA has launched two groups of satellites. Now they have. It's over 70 now satellites in orbit, and within a year or two, they need to have half their constellation up. They don't need a big constellation like SpaceX has like over 7,000 now. Amazon only needs around 3,250 satellites. But they need half of them to really be completely operational. They're going to be partly operational by the end of this year. But within another year and a half or so, they need to get, you know, 1,500 of these satellites launched into space. To do that, they've contracted with SpaceX, I think, for around four more flights with them. They've contracted with ULA using the Vulcan rocket, which is a big, I mean, that's a much bigger rocket. Instead of 24, like what SpaceX could send up, the Vulcan could send up 45 of these satellites at a time. So Vulcan has got, you know, dozens, I think it's, I forget how many launches that are they've already contracted with Amazon. They're going to use Ariane Space. Ariane Space has the Ariane 6 rocket now in operation. They've successfully launched two of those flights, and this will be the third that's coming up soon for Amazon as well. So they've got a whole bunch of contracts on their manifest to go up, along with New Glenn. New Glenn is Jeff Bezos, from their rocket company, Blue Origin, which they've so far launched one of their rockets and it made it to orbit on the first try. Not like some of these companies, you know, when they launch their vehicles, they tend to go off course, and the flight termination system is activated, you know, the FTS system, where they blow them up or they blow themselves up Blue Origin was very successful with their flight.
they're working on many missions coming up, and that will be a reusable vehicle, the New Glenn.